What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast Eclipse Edition. I don't have a sound effect, but if I had a sound effects for the Eclipse Edition, I don't think it would. What would it sound like? The sun moving, or excuse me, the sun moving. Wow, the Earth moving. That doesn't make a lot of sound. Anyway, all right, enough terrible eclipse talk. Am I going to see the eclipse? Yeah, I'm going to see the eclipse. It's very close to me. It's phenomenally close. I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it is like we are right on the edge of total viewing. So I'm going to get this podcast done, and then I'm going to go get my sweet-ass NASA-approved eclipse glasses, get in the car, and drive to some random spot off the highway and stare at the sun for a couple hours. Nothing better than two massive celestial bodies interacting in a very unique way to make you contemplate your mortality, right? We all think we're all so important. And then the Earth and the sun remind us that physics has probably got a leg up on us. Anyway, all right, enough about, existential crises. Let's talk about Major League Baseball, because what's more important than that, right? We got a short slate Monday, goofy slate, kind of a weird, we're going to have some weather issues possibly with a couple, spots here. And there was some talk on Sunday. I got a good question from Zach King. Listen, I've been playing MLB DFS, and he's like, and I've literally had a grand slam in my lineups like the last two or three nights, and I, for whatever reason, can't find cash. So, and my response was, I think that there's a specific way that we have to approach baseball in August. And it's almost like we're approaching NBA at the end of the season, which means this. I think you have to be a little bit more aggressive with your pitching choices, which means you also have to then scale down how much you're playing, right? The less floor that you feel like you're capable of generating in your lineup, I think the more more safety you have to, or excuse me, the more risk you have to embrace, and therefore you have to probably invest less. But here's my point, right? We have a number of teams who are absolutely wholly and completely tanking, a la the Mets. And we have some teams who are trying to keep players healthy. We have a ton of young prospects coming up, getting good lineup spots, hitting, throwing us into a total tizzy because their data samples are really hard to read. We can't figure out if they're going, if a 400 wOBA and 4 plate appearances is actually legit or not. So I think there's a couple points that I think that we have to figure out how to, align ourselves on. One is, I think it's time to start to target pitchers with like fringe pitchers with K upside. Because what you have to also consider is this time of year with the heat and the humidity, balls are flying and you need access to those bats. And an only way to get access to a ton of high quality bats and compete is taking, a little bit more risk on your pitcher just to get that savings in there. Where in June and May and June, we're targeting pitchers because the weather is such that it really hasn't turned towards hitters. But now it's the complete opposite. It's hitters weather. You've got shitty pitchers everywhere who are just soaking up innings. You've got a ton of prospects throughout lineups throwing things into a complete and total tizzy. Nicky Delmonico, double dongs, everywhere. That kind of stuff, you have to kind of embrace the chaos. And as a result, if you're embracing the chaos, then you have to make sure your lineup is anti-fragile. If you're looking for anti-fragility, you have to make sure that you're saying, like, anything is possible, right? Kevin Garnett, your lineup. Anything is possible. it is possible that Chris Stratton throws 10 strikeouts against the Nationals. It happened last week. It is possible that Nicky Delmonico double dongs every single night, right? We have to say that black swan is possible. And in the same voice, we have to also embrace the fact that there is a full sample set of data on certain hitters that we know from throughout a whole season that can continue to prove true. So we have to do both, right? You have to balance yourself. And this is what I've said. You have to, in some of your spots in your lineups, embrace chaos. And in other spots in your lineups, go with what you know, because things have proven to be completely true. For example, the Orioles in the second half of the season, tonight they're in a beautiful spot against a bad pitcher. Everybody knows this. Fine. But if the Orioles succeed, then you have the Orioles, right? Great. If the Orioles fail with everybody else's Orioles failure, you need something else that will allow you to rise above Orioles failure. Something else that other people aren't doing, right? That's the anti-fragility, right? Your lineups don't break and smash to pieces when the Orioles fail. Your lineups don't break and smash to pieces when Alex Wood only throws five innings, because you didn't play Alex Wood. You played Taiwan Walker, who, for whatever reason, is capable of getting six Ks and six strikeouts over, you know, six Ks over six innings against the Mets tonight. Who knows? You know, so embrace the chaos, be more aggressive, don't play as much money, you know, the small league play, you know, leagues, small GPPs, stuff like that. You know, and I read the Occupy Fantasy book over the weekend. If you haven't read it, The Ultimate Guide to Being Profitable in DFS, very, very useful. And I think one of the things that they did there well was set expectations realistically from a mathematical statistical probability standpoint as to which games you should target for what statistically driven reasons. And in that sense, I think we're in a situation where targeting lower buy-in, higher volatility games, GPPs, league play, stuff like that, stuff that will embrace variance in your lineups, things that, you know, reward variance. Those are the league types that reward variance. And if the league is reflecting massive variance right now, because it is, people are hitting home runs everywhere. Guys who are not expected to hit two home runs a game are doing it. Some pitchers are terrible and we don't know anything about them. Then you have to play the games that represent that, right? And we can't expect that cash games are going to represent that necessarily, that opportunity. You know, that's where we're at. That's where we're at with baseball right now. And if you want to turn your brain over to football, you can do that too. I'm slowly transitioning. Anyway, enough about the eclipse, enough about anti-fragility, black swans, whatever the case may be. We got a couple games to talk about, so let's go ahead and jump into the preview for tonight. All right, Oakland, Baltimore, 10.5 runs projected in Camden. Warm night, 80 degrees, 90% humidity, balmy Baltimore day, 10.5 runs, like I said. Almost six of those belong to the Orioles against Chris Smith. And guess, hey, guys, remember last time we played Chris Smith against him, Trey Mancini double dong? Yep, it was awesome. So they are very affordable tonight. I think they are going to be the chalk, and they should be the chalk, because they're in an excellent position here against the A's. Ubaldo Jimenez, interesting. Although, wait, it was Dylan. Wait a second. Hold on now. It was Wade Miley. It looks like they're pitching Ubaldo. If they're really, are they really, did they really just change this to Ubaldo? Oh, man. If it's Ubaldo, then the Athletics are in play, obviously. It was Wade Miley. I did all my research on Wade Miley. Anyway, all right, if it's Ubaldo, and I think the O's are in, or the A's are in play, I'll talk about it later. Dodgers, Pirates, 8.5 runs projected here in PNC. You know, Garrett Cole, not a bad pitcher, but of course the Dodgers here have the lefties to get to him, and it's the lefties that are a problem. Alex Wood on the opposite side. Pirates only applied for 3.7 runs. They're pesky, they're annoying, but they're not that good. So you have a pretty clear floor with Alex Wood. We'll talk about him for sure. Boston, Cleveland, 9.5 runs projected in Progressive Field. You got to like the Indians at home here. 5 runs projected for them against E-Rod, 4.5 for the Red Sox. Nice night for baseball, 80 degrees, 70% humidity, a little bit of wind blowing out of the park, nothing significant. I do like the Indians here. I do. I like the Indians. I like their prices. I like their upside against, a pitcher who has struggled with contact issues. Diamondbacks, Mets, 9 runs projected in New York. Curtis Granderson, no longer a Met. So we have even fewer lefties to stare down. Taijuan Walker, Robert Gsellman on the opposite side. Diamondbacks have been so-so lately. Some good wins, some tough losses. That's kind of, I don't really know what to make of them. They don't really feel like a playoff team right now. But they are in a good spot against Gsellman, who gets hit pretty hard. Mariners, Braves, 9.5 runs projected in Atlanta. 85 degrees here. The eclipse will be over with, so people can watch baseball without weird NASA glasses on. Albers versus Fulton Nevich. See, this is the thing. Albers. What do we do with Albers? I don't know. He had one really tilting, annoying outing against the Orioles, but he could get absolutely smashed by the Braves, who the Braves are bad. But Nick Markakis hit a double dong in Coors, and when has that ever happened? You know, I mean, it's one of these weird things, or excuse me, Ender Inciarte. It's one of these weird things it's very difficult to project. And so, you know, this isn't Freddie Freeman versus a righty, you know, like this isn't something we've understood all year will work. Albers is a lefty here. And Braves are favored, which I don't necessarily agree with, because Fulton Nevich, even though he's been good over the course of the year, has really struggled with contact issues lately. And you've got some great Mariners lefties in this situation that could certainly do some damage. They did some damage against the Rays. Twins, White Sox. This game has terrible weather written all over it. 50% chance of rain starting at 8 p.m. It can escalate up to 60%. Throughout the course of the night. I just, if it plays, you gotta like it, because you have Dylan G versus Carson Fulmer, which is just, who are these fuckers? Nobody knows. The weather seems to be improving. The forecast just got better. They just updated it. Interesting. 10.5 runs projected here. The Twins lefties should be able to get to Fulmer. That's what they're saying. Vegas is saying 5.4 runs for the Twins, 5 runs for the White Sox, who we know the White Sox don't go quietly. We've seen them be a pain in the butt. And slate winners, too. You know, I mean, the White Sox have been good. Rangers, Angels, 8.5 runs projected in L.A. Cole Hamels versus Tyler Skaggs. Guess who's favored here? Tyler Skaggs. See, this is what I'm talking about. You can't expect that Cole Hamels, like a career, you know, phenomenal pitcher, is going to be favored in this situation, because the Angels are playing really well. They're intensely pesky. Cole Hamels has batted ball problems. Skaggs has proven to have some really good stuff. The Rangers aren't as good on the road. It's all right there. But on face value, that just doesn't make sense, right? This is the volatility of late season baseball. And Milwaukee, San Francisco, 8.5 runs projected in AT&T Park. Milwaukee favored 4.3 to 4.1 San Francisco runs. Yeah, Chris Stratton, not great. Definitely not great. He had a great outing, and there's something to like here with his strikeout upside against a Brewers team in this ballpark. Probably at lower ownership than expected. So that's where we're at here, guys. 8 games, some hard ones to read, but we'll talk about them all. So let's jump into the player breakdown. Who do you love? All right. Obviously, Alex Wood is your clear top option on this slate. Okay. Wood versus the Pirates. He actually owns his K rate just keeps dropping. You know, it's down to 26%, I think it is. You know, he has a really high floor, okay, given this matchup, the ballpark, etc. The Pirates have graded out as below average across the year, but right now they're grading out as a pretty average opponent, 21% strikeout rate in the last 30 days, a 165 ISO, not a lot of power in this team. We've seen them hit some dingers, you know, some kind of random dingers here. And Alex Wood, we know, has given up some more runs lately. It's very hard to think that Wood slips below a quality start and a win in this situation. Gerrit Cole struggles with lefties, ton of lefties in this lineup. You have to think the Dodgers are capable of bouncing back after that rough start, rough outing against Verlander, who just continues to, I don't understand why a playoff contender hasn't picked him up. Like the Tigers are clearly willing to move from him. Somebody's just not willing to pay for him. I don't know. You know, Wood, even though the strikeouts aren't there, continues to limit the hard contact. He limits the fly balls. There's basically no walks. His ground ball rate has been stellar, above 55%. You limit your upside to some degree because I think unless you somehow find the low-cost, high-upside offense to pair with Wood, who has a very, very high floor, Wood plus one chalky stack and then one highly under-owned stack should work for you. That could work. But I think that it's probably easier to attack two high-powered offenses and then pivot at pitcher tonight, given the fact that the pitching landscape is going to throw people tilting into oblivion because it's really hard to get a sense of what you can do here. That makes sense. And that's true. I mean, it's really, I had a hard time with it. But I like Wood here, definitely. I think the floor is definitely at least 32 points, right? Let's call it 32 points. If you're pivoting, listen, Tyler Skaggs is interesting. The fact that he's getting so much love from Vegas here at home is very, very interesting to me, okay? Now, on average, the Rangers have been bad on the year against left-handers. They're not good. They have 25% strikeout rate, below average in a lot of metrics. They're definitely worse on the road. But the second half of the season, they have really picked it up, okay? And Skaggs is good, but he's not phenomenal, right? He's shown some upside, but he's not exactly great. I think that's, but that said, you know, point per dollar wise, could he go get you six strikeouts? Yeah, I think he could. I mean, you look at what he's capable of in this situation, and it seems like, you know, the Rangers on the road here certainly could be a good matchup for him. You know, in the last three starts in August that he's had, we've seen a large range of outcomes against decent opponents. You know, he had a very solid start against Seattle in which he was able to, you know, he continues to limit the runs scored. Only a total of five runs through these three starts. That's nice. Okay. He only got one quality start because they're willing to pull him out of there. But he's shown he's capable of generating, you know, five or six strikeouts. I don't think it's unreasonable to see five or six strikeouts. It's just a question of how many runs does he give up and how many innings does he get against? How long is his leash against the Rangers? That's my question. Does he get a quality start? I don't know if he does. And all of a sudden, your upside goes out the window if you can't get a quality start in this situation. One guy who I do think can get a quality start is Taijuan Walker. Vegas is projecting the Mets for 4.2 runs, and their hard contact rate would say yes. But they've had so much roster fluctuation of late that it really just doesn't feel, it doesn't feel like this Mets team is as reliably, isn't as predictable as it should be, And I'm sure that Vegas has had a hard time projecting them. Walker's given up a lot, you know, given up three runs basically every single time he's gone out. He has a hard time lasting, but he gets a couple things going for him, right? Big ballpark. The weather's not exactly in his favor, but he's got a big ballpark here. He does have strikeout ability. He is a righty who throws a four-seamer in a slider. And we saw a four-seam slider righty with some heat, right? He throws about 92. He's not Severino, but we saw a four-seamer righty with some heat do work against them, and that was Severino. And I'm not going to say even – he's not even in the same realm as Severino. There's a lot to tell me that he's just not. The walks are not the same. But I could easily see him getting a quality start and a win against Gesellman here and get you 5-6 Ks. Like, he's shown strikeout upside in certain situations. Granderson's not there. You get a bunch of rookies. Almost everybody on this roster has a 20% strikeout rate to left-handers. I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think it's my favorite decision, but I don't think it's unreasonable that Walker has almost the same range of outcomes as some of these other guys. You know, Tyler Skaggs, for example, or even Alex Wood. Quality start and a win for both of them, fine. Okay, that's 10 points. You get the 6 innings, maybe a couple earned runs. And 5 Ks, I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's crazy for Walker. And if he can generate a very similar stat line to Alex Wood in this situation, then, you know, why wouldn't he? Why would you pay for Wood over Walker? Now, I think the one guy that people are going to be kind of attracted to is Chris Stratton, just because he flashed. And, you know, his swinging strike rate has represented it. He's got a 10% swinging strike rate, and he dusted the Nationals for 10 strikes, 10 strikeouts, 10 strikes. It was a really bad game. 10 strikeouts, 28% fly ball rate, very good. Very solid at limiting hard contact since he's been in the majors. He only has one home run to his name. That's nice. I mean, against the Brewers, you want a guy who's capable of limiting home runs. You add to that the worst park in baseball for home runs. You know, the Brewers are coming from Coors where the ball is just flying for him. Not anymore. Okay. That's nice. He struggles with walks. Okay. And he does struggle with left-handers. But you get a massive ballpark, one of the biggest park downgrades that the Brewers could get, really. I mean, they play at home in Milwaukee. They go on the road to Coors, and then they have to go to AT&T. Ball's just not going to do what they want it to do. You know, I think that there is power upside here. I think that there are strikeout upside here against a free-swinging team. His metrics are all over the place, but he has gotten BABIPed in all of those starts, which if your BABIP normalizes, then you should be better off. And it hasn't yet. So he's got an elevated BABIP, so we should be able to try and say, okay, let's reel that in towards normal, right? If we get something normal, then we should get a better understanding of him. And really, the thing that appeals to me is his minor league numbers are, at least from a batted ball perspective, a lot like an Alex Wood. 55% hard contact rate, below 28%, 55% ground ball rate, below 30% fly ball rate, below 30% hard contact rate. Obviously, that's not a comp. Alex Wood is one of the most dominant pitchers in the league, but I think that Stratton has some appeal, at least on paper, in this situation. The one thing that does worry me is the walks. Right, if he starts walking, but the Brewers don't walk. I don't know. So I think that's somewhere you could certainly go. It's hard. Pitching is going to be difficult, which is part of the reason why I'm willing to just take as much savings as possible, right? Or the opposite, right? Pay for Wood and try to solve the bats. All right, so sticks. Orioles versus Chris Smith. The secret's out. Chris Smith sucks. Everybody's going to play the Orioles here, and you should play the Orioles too. The leverage, you know, we had him we had this stack last time against Smith in Oakland at, you know, 3%. It's not going to happen here. It's a beautiful spot. They're going to light him up. You know, of course, now that I say that, it's not going to happen. 1 through 6, though, I think 1 through 4 generates massive ownership because it's very affordable. Beckham, Scope, Machado, Jones. But I would very, very, very easily add Mancini and even Wellington Castillo. Although there are a lot of places to pay down for catcher today that I think are perfectly acceptable. You know, Mark Trumbo is not that good. But this is on paper a very good matchup for him. And we know he's capable of hitting a home run. You know, I think you could get some variance in your lineup by going down to the bottom half of this lineup. The Mancini, Trumbo, and Davis of the world just aren't going to generate as much ownership as the top half. If you want to try to be different, then just go to the guys 5, 6, and 7. You know, one of my favorite things to do is to do a 1 through 4 stack and then a 5 or 4, 5, 6, 7 stack. And then take even one more version of that and go like, you know, 1, 3, 5, 7, something like that. Which might be a good night for that. Right. And then just mix a different stack in there with all of them, to see, you know, how you generate upside that way. So it could be fun. I think the Orioles, you have to have them here. They've been really hot at home. They're just hitting home runs constantly. Highest total on the slate of 5.9 runs. But, you know, you're not going to be the only person on them. So certainly get some variance there. Now, the other side of this is obviously very appealing. You get Ubaldo now, changed from Miley, which Miley was like in play as a pitcher. Now it's Ubaldo. You gotta like Oakland versus Ubaldo. I mean, he's had some really good starts, but he got hit hard in his last one against the Mariners. He only lasted, you know, 4 innings. He gives up 8 hits, a dinger. He only strikes out 2. I just don't see the Athletics in this situation, you know, giving Ubaldo the same love that they gave him last time and, you know, generating 11 strikeouts. Like, it just doesn't, they get the park upgrade. It just doesn't happen. There's no way. Right. So I have no problem with going to my classic Oakland stack here. Joyce, Lowry, Chris Davis, Matt Olson. I love those guys in this spot. I think it's a great spot to attack the Athletics here. Even though Ubaldo's been hot, it doesn't bother me. I think that we still know he has batted ball issues, and if he starts to get unlucky, that's going to continue. And Oakland can hit baseballs. Like, it's just not the case that they can't hit baseballs. They have an above average hard contact rate, above average fly ball rate. Yes, they swing too much. No, they're not perfect. They're generally a bad baseball team, but they're probably a good fantasy asset. Remember, there's a difference between fantasy baseball and real baseball. All right, a couple other things here. Seattle versus Foltynewicz. He's been getting smacked lately. Way too many hard contact, way too many fly balls. Could this be the spot when he says, okay, reel it in, Mike? Yeah, maybe, but the Mariners are just playing well. They're generating a lot of runs. They generated a lot of runs in that series, you know, not against Blake Snell, which is amazing and hilarious. We saw the Blake Snell start that everyone dreamed of. But they're good against righties. You know, I think they proved that over the weekend. You know, they hit Pruitt really hard. They hit Faria, or I forget who started on Saturday. But they played well in that spot as well. You know, Cano, Alonso, Seager, very easy. Segura is also just so good. It's just such a clear floor with Segura. Not to mention, you probably will get steals upside because Tyler Flowers is not exactly elite at throwing out batters. Foltynewicz doesn't really have a hard time keeping runners on, but Segura is definitely capable of stealing against a subpar catcher. So, I'm into it. I'm into the Mariners here, even though Vegas likes the Braves. You know, Albers is not good, but who on the Braves? I mean, I guess you can play the Braves for value. Albies free, Phillips. Freeman just against the lefty, not that interested. You are going to get the bullpen, and Freeman could definitely dong off the bullpen. But I don't play Matt Kemp. You know, I don't really have a lot of the Braves don't have a lot of appeal to me here in this situation. So I like the Mariners stack. I think that works really pretty well. I'm into it. The other place that you can go that's relatively inexpensive, not inexpensive, but cost effective, I think is the Diamondbacks. I mean, you have a lot of guys, obviously Goldie and JD are high priced, but most of these guys are in, you know, below 3K or at 3.5 and below. I mean, you David Peralta 3.4, Jake Lamb 3.5, JD 3.6. And then Daniel Descalso and Kettle Marte are 2.3 and 2.6. Those prices are amazing against Robert Gsellman. I love it. They've struggled lately, but this team can get going. We know they can hit home runs. You can get home runs from almost anybody in this lineup. So I have no problem attacking Gsellman here. You know, I think you take one of the value guys, either a Descalso or Marte, based on, you know, just kind of what you need. They're both good hitters. They hit righties well. Gsellman has hard contact issues with lefties. So Descalso certainly should be in a good spot here. He's a platoon guy against righties. You know, Paul Goldschmidt is one of the best hitters in baseball, if not the best hitter in the National League. JD at that price is just so appealing. And Jake Lamb, I mean, you could very easily go 3, 4, 5, 6 here. Lamb, Goldschmidt, JD, and Descalso, and feel really good. Feel really good about that. That's not unreasonable. I mean, there's home run upside in all of those guys. So I don't mind the Diamondbacks here. Gsellman, he's given it up to both sides of the plate, but certainly the lefties, 36% hard contact rate to them, 21% home run to fly ball ratio. Does he generate more ground balls than fly balls? Yes. Yeah, he's a ground ball guy. But against a good offense like this, I think he could, you know, he could struggle. And you know, he is liable to get blown up. I mean, the Dodgers, for example, blew him up. You know, the Marlins blew him up, for God's sakes. He can generate a lot of offensive value for you if you let him. You know, so I think Gsellman is certainly one of the guys that I'm willing to attack. Now, a couple places that I think are probably going to generate some lower ownership in my mind. Cleveland. I don't think people are going to be on Cleveland, but I don't mind Cleveland versus Erod in this situation. Rodriguez has struggled. You know, he's had some nice outings recently against the Yankees and the White Sox. But listen, the Yankees are not immune to striking out. The White Sox, we know, certainly have the ability to strike out, and he generated some whiffs there. Good for him. But St. Louis destroyed him last time out. Not destroyed, but like hit him hard enough that he had to leave before the fifth, and he didn't get, you know, they didn't win that game. The Indians have proven just immense plate discipline, which is, you know, if you're relying on strikeouts, he's not going to get those from the Indians. You know, and they're very consistent against left-handers. They've never dropped below average this season. They're hitting the ball well. They're favored here, 5 runs at home. I think people probably not quite know what to do with them because their prices are a little elevated. They're definitely not going to be as popular as the Orioles, but I have no problem with the Indians at home. And I certainly like Lindor against a lefty more than against a righty. I like E5 here. Of course, his batted ball data against lefties has been excellent. Massive fly ball right there. Jay Bruce was hitting the hell out of the ball, and Rodriguez struggles with lefties more than he does righties. So if Bruce is in that cleanup spot, I think he will likely go under owned because you see lefty lefty. And is Jay Bruce as good against lefties as he is against righties? No, but you have a situation where you have a high quality hitter and a pitcher with reverse splits. So yeah, You know, the fly ball correlation, though, with E5 is just excellent here. So I don't mind that either. Now, one other spot that I know will likely go overlooked that I think we should be willing to attack is, and then I'm going to talk about White Sox Twins because the weather here is hard to get a read on. The Angels against Cole Hamels. They're favored here for a reason. And the reason is that Hamels gets hit and he doesn't strike people out. You have a problem with getting hit and you don't strike people out, then the Angels are pretty much the worst matchup that you could have because they are really pesky. They are very, very, very capable hitters who won't strike out. They'll generate base runners. Hamill's not going to throw anybody out. They're going to put pressure on the base path by stealing. There's a lot that just doesn't line up for Hamels in this situation. You add to that that the Rangers are coming off of a massive homestand where the ball was just flying out of the ballpark. It's just not a good situation for them. I think the Angels are in a great spot. I think you have to use Maben and Trout. Like, there's just no reason to play the Angels and not play Mike Trout. If you're stacking the Angels and you're not putting Mike Trout in there, you're doing it wrong. There's no reason not to play Mike Trout in your Angels stack. And Cameron Maben, if he bats leadoff at 2-2, right, 7.4K for two bats, 7.4K, that roughly breaks out to, you know, 3.7K for two bats, okay? Obviously, that's, you know, what you're averaging there. But then you bring down those prices in the rest of the Angels stack with CJ Cron at 3K and Andrelton Simmons at 3.1. You know, I have no problem if you want to say, you know, maybe I'll skip Cron, I'll skip Simmons, whatever, fine, okay. Martin Maldonado, cheap punt catcher, no problem with him either. So I think the Angels are in play here. They're pesky, they have a floor. They're favored. They're at home. Cole Hamels has issues. They're going to be lower owned than they should be. I think the Angels are a great spot to mix with your chalky Orioles, for example. Like, you could do Angels and Orioles. And, you know, you may not be able to play Machado and Trout unless you play Chris Stratton, for example, 6K pitcher, which could be really fun. All right. If this Twins White Sox games plays, these pitchers are pretty bad, and they are worth attacking. Dylan G, if you remember Dylan G from I believe he was on Texas earlier this season. I'm pretty sure he was, right? He was in Texas earlier this season. Yeah, he was on Texas earlier this season. And then he, you know, moved over to be like a loogie man for Minnesota. You know, and he's been fine there, but he's not good. You know, he's got an xFIP of 4.6. You know, he hasn't allowed a ton of home runs. I think that's one thing. He did against the Mets in his start against the Mets. That was the one game he started, and he got blown up. As a reliever, he hasn't really allowed a lot of home runs. Now, we know that your statistics scale way back when you go from relief work to full starting responsibilities. You know, that's just the way it is. He's been pretty good at limiting the batted ball data, limiting the hard contact here from lefties and righties. But I think the White Sox certainly capable of getting to him in this situation. You know, they don't have the lefties necessarily, but they have guys who will bat him from the left side of the plate. Excuse me. Well, I take that back, right? Leroy Garcia and Yoan Moncada will face him as a lefty. That's great. Add Nicky Delmonico there. It's even better. So there's four lefties right there. And, you know, Abreu at 3.9 doesn't really offer you a lot of salary relief, but he's capable of hitting everyone. And the Twins bullpen is not necessarily anything that they've been proud of this year. Now, on the opposite side, the Twins are favored here against Carson Fulmer, who, reliever. If he's a White Sox reliever, then I think we have to... Like, by the way, this game, when I started to do research, had like an 80% chance of rain starting at 8 o'clock. Now it's gone down to 50% chance. So we'll see. Let me see if I can get some data on Fulmer for you guys real quick. We'll try to get a sense of who this clown is. Carson Fulmer. There you are. Carson Fulmer is been pitching in the minor leagues this year. Triple A ball, where he, Carson, he generated a 17% K rate. He had an xFIP of 4.6. His BABIP was exactly 300 in Triple A there, which tells you what you see is what you get. Okay, what you see is what you get with Carson Fulmer. Struggles with lefties, struggles with righties in 2016, you know, very small sample size, but both of them seem to be hitting him well. He doesn't seem to have massive strikeout ability. So I think, you know, even with Miguel Sano on the DL for a little bit, you could certainly go to the Twins here. Dozier, obviously, in the leadoff position. That's massively expensive, but no one's going to pay for Brian Dozier at 4-2. No one's going to do it. Max Kepler, 3-5, fine. You know, Eddie Rosario at 3-7, that's really expensive for the Mets, the Twins. But I think you're unique. I don't think people pay for them. I think the value in this game comes from the White Sox, but the prices on the Twins are probably going to force people to make, they're going to be lower owned. But still, this isn't... It's not my favorite situation, but God, at 10.5 runs in guaranteed rate, you got to think that this could be a spot that wins the slate. All right, let's head over to FanDuel. Let's see if we can throw together a lineup. Now, one guy, lineup construction technique, all right, for this time of year, one of the things that I like to do, all right, is I'm going to stack my bats. I'm going to attack my bats first. And then I'm going to go to my pitcher catcher, right? So I'm going to get my favorite 4x4 in both spots. Okay, I'm going to go 4x4 in both spots. So let's walk through this and let's go with the Orioles. Okay, I'm going to get Beckham. I'm going to get Scope. I'm going to get Mancini because you guys know I love Trey Mancini. Okay, and I will take. I will take, I'm trying to think about how to be different in this situation. I don't want to be different. I want to play Manny Machado. All right. Then I'm going to attack first base. And I think the combination of savings and upside, I gravitate towards Yonder Alonso. The issue there is I can't get all the lefties in that I want in that situation. Oh, here's an idea. What if I get off Manny Machado, okay, and I go Paul Goldschmidt, who no one is going to play, Jake Lamb, and then I go to JD, because that's just too cheap for JD Martinez. And I go to, where's Peralta? Peralta, okay. So I have a 4-man Arizona stack with a 3-man Baltimore stack. Now, I'm gonna punt catcher, because I think there's a lot of really solid punt catcher options on this slate, which include, but are not limited to, Martin Maldonado. How much is Mike Zunino? Mike Zunino, 2,400? Interesting. Let's see how much. I throw Mike Zunino in there, and I still have 8,500 for pitcher, right? And I've basically played every single bat that I want here in this situation. And I still have 8,500 for pitcher, which leaves me, you know, with a number of options here. But, like, I think the approach is here, guys, to attack the bats that you want. Don't be shy. and then worry about your pitcher and then tweak your lineups from there, right? Let's go with Chris Stratton here, and I'm going to try that lineup that I mentioned where I have Machado and Mike Trout. Okay, so Manny Machado in at third base. I'm going to go Maldonado. Oh my gosh, this is going to work so perfectly. CJ Cron, right? And then I go to Mike Trout. And I still have $5,000 left for a freaking second outfielder. But the second outfielder that I want to play for is Cameron Maben, who may or may not play. He's actually day-to-day. When did he leave the game? Oh, he played. Okay, he played. Okay, so Cam Maben. And I still have $2,900 here. I have $8,900 left at pitcher. Like, I could pitch Clevinger. I could pitch almost anybody. And if I find, you know, if I find $800 somewhere in this lineup, then I have, a perfect combination of chalk and variance and the ability to basically play all the best bats on the slate. Like, if that's the way to attack lineup building these days, is a massive four-man stack, go 2 4-by-4s, get your upside from the offense that wins the slates, okay? And then find a pitcher within that who can provide you with some strikeouts. And in this situation, I'm not really sure who I would go with. But the fact that I have Manny Machado and Mike Trout in the same lineup is just ridiculous to me. I just shouldn't be capable of doing this, but whatever. That's the way we're doing it, guys. Hey, enjoy the eclipse. If you're not watching it, that's fine. I will be. I'll let you know how it goes. Enjoy the baseball, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.